So, settling into your meditation position, posture. We've all come here knowing we'd be meditating, so it's nice to see everybody easily finds that place, that settling. And you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. So even though we're doing this online, we don't have to be staring at the screen while we're meditating. What a relief. And beginning by tuning into the body as a whole, the body at rest, sitting or lying down. And having a sense of softening and releasing any tension, just draining out of the body. Releasing the shoulders, softening the belly, relaxing the jaw, this first instruction can often bring us into awareness of subtle sensations and feelings that we might not have been noticing. Some pleasant, some maybe unpleasant, others were neutral. But this opening instruction can actually be quite interesting, just tuning in to the body. And as we relax, just a nice sense of calm, of peace. Nothing to do right now, nothing to accomplish, nothing to worry about. Just a gentle easing into presence. Feeling the breath moving in the body. Feeling of the breath at the nostrils coming in and out. The feeling of the breath lifting. Releasing in the body, the chest and belly. we can start to use the breath in a more focused way as a concentration object. Letting the mind become absorbed into the experience of breathing, just breathing. And noticing when the attention wanders, when you drift into thinking. At times we'll see that the thoughts are expressions of real concerns. Other times they're just the meanderings of the mind. So we keep coming back to the breath. Can use the breath to tune into feelings, breathing into feelings, into the energies that are moving through the heart and mind, the rhythm of the breath moving with those feelings. We have the breath as our central focus. And there's a kind of constellation of other elements of experience that we can tune in when necessary, when useful. Maybe it's thoughts or sensations in the body, mood or emotions, perhaps we're getting sleepy or restless, we're tuning into effort. Always with the breath as our place to return, as our home. Sometimes we find ourselves thinking about our meditation instead of meditating. We fool ourselves into thinking that by thinking about meditating, we're doing something helpful. Just another way of avoiding being present. All right. I'm kind of useless meditating in the evening. 20 minutes, I just about conk out. Which is always embarrassing when you're supposed to be the teacher. But maybe it's good. It's a bit of a strange time. Welcome, everyone, Friday night. Presumably it's Friday night where you are, unless you're in Asia or somewhere of the sort. We do occasionally get someone dropping in from Thailand or Australia, which isn't Asia, I know. As I mentioned, tomorrow I am teaching a day-long retreat in Oakland on Living Kindness. I'm going to have books there. It's a little strange to teach a day-long. It's been so rare to be teaching in person with people. So I was noticing myself being in a mood. And I told my wife that I thought it was that I'm probably nervous, but I don't know how to, I don't process nervousness as nervousness. I think that I'm like sad or depressed, but I'm not. So that's interesting. I also will mention in the marketing department that Living Kindness is also available as an audiobook. It came out as an audiobook at the same time it came out as a paperback and a Kindle. So if you're interested, I just downloaded it today. And as soon as I heard my voice, I stopped. So it was like, oh, there's me. Just kind of wanted to check it was there. Excuse me, cough drop. So it's interesting because, I'm returning to this project that I really did a lot of the writing of that book probably in 2017. So it was really the early former guy years. Then Shambhala took it to publish it in 2021. So then I sort of stopped looking at it. I mean, I worked with them on it, made a few changes. But now it's coming back. And I'm getting into finding it interesting to get into actually trying to teach out of it and around it. What else do I want to say? Well, I don't know how people are doing. It's January. It's such a strange time of year. I know I got that video from you yesterday and from the pier in Santa Cruz being knocked out. And there was actually something in the New York Times about that today. And I have a neighbor who just moved in last year, and I think just moved to California. And he's like walking his dog. He's like, is this normal weather? Is this the way it usually is? Because we were here last winter and it didn't rain at all. I was like, yeah, that's not normal. This isn't normal. There just is no normal in California. It's like, it's normal is that it's just different and weird. Having these, we're in, this atmospheric river and it's kind of like, I'm having an emotional atmospheric river. I'm guessing some other people are too. It's like the atmosphere of my mind is disturbed. Is it still raining? Oh, it's still raining. Oh, it's, Your home is tested. It's like it's a great test. How is the roof? You find out how the roof is. So it is, the Dharma of it to me is just holding that sort of unknown and Ajahn Chah says it's uncertain, and which is really interesting. I'm getting going now, so here we go. There's an ad that's been running on the television, which, you know, I've been known to watch, especially have to watch the ads during the basketball games. But it's Cal Hope. I don't know if any of you have seen this ad. And it's like, there's this whole like program that California is offering, like for mental health and addiction. And it's called Cal Hope. And it starts out, it just says, it prints on the screen. And this very nice, soothing woman's voice says, "Life is uncertain." And I'm always like, oh, look, it's Ajahn Chah. It's Dharma on TV. It's so great. Life is uncertain. And I always, I'm touched by that. I went to visit Wes Nisker this week, who has been a really important teacher for me. And he's the first person to actually invite me to formally give a Dharma talk for his group back in 1996. So, you know, I owe a lot to him as a mentor. And he's deteriorating rapidly. He's just reaching 80 and he's not doing well. And so just to be with him, is always, is again, like life is uncertain. Because then yesterday I talked to my 83-year-old brother, who's like out there in the gym and working out and just went to Puerto Rico to visit his stepkids. And like, you know, aging is very uncertain how it unfolds. But I wanted to mention that Wes's book, which was a really important book for me, it has been re-released. His book that was called Buddha's Nature is now released as Being Nature. And it covers the four foundations of mindfulness through the lens of evolutionary biology. And it's, so it's got this science and Dharma and suttas and humor, because Wes is a very funny, clever person. And and it was published in like 1998. It's like before anybody was talking about the four foundations of mindfulness. Like that wasn't really talked about very much before then, and before people were really bringing science in with the Dharma very much. So it was a very cutting edge book. And so if you're interested, I would really recommend that. I've been rereading it myself, really enjoying it. So I will come to the topic of the evening, which is taking refuge. I'm going to actually look at, people have commented a little bit. I wanted to see what you're, okay. Thank you, Angela, for putting some things in there. Oh, thank you for recording the book. Oh, good. Oh, you're listening to it. That's wonderful, Holly. That's exciting. Somebody's actually there. The book is called, my book is called, Living Kindness. Wes's book is called Being Nature. Yes, thank you for filling people in there, Angela. Great. So I will proceed. I'm getting back to A Burning Desire, my book, A Burning Desire, just which is, you know, for those who haven't been with us for a long time, I've been kind of using different of my books to just set off, you know, a teaching to keep me going, since I've been doing this twice a week for coming up on 3 years. So something to prime the Dharma talk pump. And so I'm on page 156 of A Burning Desire, and I'll read a little bit of this. This is the part of the book on step three, and really the whole book is kind of about step three. So this is kind of the heart of it all. In the Buddhist tradition, the parallel to turning your will and your life over to the care of God is taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. This means committing ourselves to be mindful, awake like the Buddha, to living in harmony with the truth, with the Dharma. and living a life of non-harming, supporting and being supported by the followers of the Buddha, the Sangha. In the five daily recollections, which is a teaching from the Buddha, we are told that we take refuge in our karma. This doesn't mean that some magical force is looking out for us. It means that if we live well, we'll be okay. And not even in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense. When we take refuge, we aren't expecting some beneficent God to care for us now that we've bowed down to him. Instead, we see that if we commit ourselves to these principles, we'll be protected by the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We are the ones who have to do the work in this relationship. We have to try to be mindful as much as we can, to seek out and live in the truth, accepting suffering, impermanence, and corelessness, and trying to fulfill the Eightfold Path, to support others on the path and to give our time and love to the community. The commitment is challenging, but the rewards are great. I'll read a little bit more. In different Buddhist traditions, there are formal ways of taking refuge, some that involve becoming official members of a community. This ritual can be powerful and vital, but the real work is the daily commitment. One of the things many practitioners do is to take the refuges each day at the end of their morning meditation. This can be done simply by saying to yourself, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. I try to add a little to this prayer by saying, I take refuge in the Buddha, I commit myself to being as awake and mindful as I can today. And I might take a moment to absorb this commitment and imagine carrying this awareness with me through the day. I take refuge in the Dharma. I will try to remember the truth as I go through my day. Ajahnamurobo expands the meaning of Sangha to be a life of morality that is the natural response to the awake mind seeing the truth, the Buddha seeing the Dharma. So when I say I take refuge in the Sangha, I add, I will seek to express awareness and truth through moral and caring actions today. Taking refuge in the Buddha, making this commitment to live mindfully, is the key to all spiritual growth, the starting point and the touchstone to which we always return. In the 12-step process, mindfulness is at the root of step one, seeing and admitting to our addiction. Until we bring this awareness to our problem, there is no possibility of recovery. Mindfulness is also required to take inventory, step four. Here we have to look at ourselves, our past actions, and our habitual patterns of thought and emotion in an unsparing way. As we deepen our mindfulness, we become more able to open to what can sometimes be painful admissions about ourselves. A commitment to mindfulness also means that we are trying to pay attention to moments in our day when we tend to shut down or check out. When we turn our will and our lives over to mindfulness, we start to try to bring this quality of attention more and more into our lives. We try to apply it to everything, to our internal and external experiences, to our thoughts and feelings, to our relationships and social interactions, to our work and our creative pursuits, to our play and our entertainments. There's nothing that can't be engaged with mindfulness. This is the Buddha's lesson. So, I don't know. I always find myself, critiquing my own writing when I read these things aloud. But as I was thinking about this topic earlier today, I was thinking about taking refuge, maybe in a slightly different way, taking refuge in Buddha particularly, in a slightly different way. Well, I guess I was thinking about all of them. So taking refuge in Buddha if we think of the Buddha as the awakened mind, then I was thinking of taking refuge in the Buddha as also being this commitment to training the mind. Because that's the one of the ways we characterize what we're doing when we're meditating is we're trying to train ourselves. And I kind of like that in terms of my, you know, I'm taking refuge. If I'm saying that to myself, what am I doing? Because sometimes it's a little vague for me to say, I'm taking refuge means I'm going to try to be mindful. I mean, that's good, but I like the idea maybe a little bit more of that I'm expressing this relationship, which is an ongoing relationship of development, you know, that I'm continuing to try to develop my, not just my mindfulness, but my concentration, my mindfulness, my effort, my mental states, cultivating them. So that's because, and the reason we say that that's refuge in the Buddha is that the word Buddha, the word Buddha means awake. And so the Buddha represents, when we take refuge in the Buddha, there's this refuge in the historical Buddha as our teacher. So that's something else we do, like I want to learn more from my teacher. So that's kind of like studying. But then the awakened mind, I'm trying to cultivate and keep training the awakened mind. So this is, so it's both literal, the historical Buddha, and then more metaphorical of the symbol of the awakened mind that I'm kind of cultivating. And then taking refuge in the Dharma and partly means to me that I'm trying to study the Dharma and really understand it. But also one of the principles that I often turn to is this idea of seeing things through the lens of the Dharma. And as I like to say, through the lens of Dharma rather than through the lens of self. So our natural way of being in the world and seeing and interpreting our experiences in the world is through our own, self view, our experience and conditioning as a person with preferences and judgments and, delusion, like the delusions that we all live under, right? That are kind of our psychological conditioning and that sort of creates this, neurotic mind. and so the taking refuge in the Buddha, then it's trying to step out of that. Can I step out of that? And obviously it helps if you've been doing the training of the mind to be more mindful and then, which is really the process the Buddha talks about, and then being able to go, what does this look like through the lens of Dharma? So again, going to see my old friend, what I'm seeing is, impermanence. There's this person who was vigorous and active and intellectually brilliant and creative, and now that's all leaving him. And so I look at him and I see, there's impermanence. And then, of course, I remember, I too am of the same nature. I too, the fact that I'm driving over and able to walk up the steps and then go home and work on my book, that's just because that's the way it is right now. But this is temporary. That changes the relationship with it, because the personal relationship is to that impermanence is, that's so sad. I feel sorry for him. that he's going through that. And I'm going to try to avoid recognizing that that's me. I don't want to think about that that's me coming, that that's my future. And, you know, I'm not really going to acknowledge that I'm just happen to be, you know, at a different stage of life. So, so that to me is really important. I mean, this, you know, having that capacity, and this is just one example, you know, it applies in many, many ways, you know, evoking compassion rather than anger in situations, you know, generosity rather than well, I guess, you know, stinginess or fearfulness, you know, openness rather than being closed, and all the ways that the Dharma encourages us to respond to the world. So this is really how we express our connection with these teachings. You know, coming and meditating together for a few minutes is great, but the meaning of it and the value of it is when we take that into our lives and into our thinking, into our way of seeing the world. And then taking refuge in the Sangha, you know, this is what we're doing right now, right? Together. That's why we're together. And in some ways, I think taking refuge in the Sangha is it's a really wise action that's not that common. You know, I often, especially, you know, people in recovery know this, like, you know, we depend upon our community in a way that most people, it's not that most people don't, maybe, I don't know if most people do or don't depend upon a community, but we are aware of our need for community in a way that a lot of other people may not be. And I think that makes us particularly connected to that refuge in Sangha. And I often, you know, find myself reminding people when they ask about what they should do, you know, when they're having a challenge, or if they're trying to get sober, or they're trying to get more into Dharma or whatever, to find a community to be part of. You know, because it's like, it's January, you're making a resolution. Okay, what's going to keep your resolution going? You? No. What will keep your resolution going is if you have a community that you're with. It's easy to start things alone. You know, it's not relatively, I don't know, you know, it's not that difficult. Okay, I can stop drinking for a day or two or a week or whatever. And I can start meditating and do that for a few days or a week. But to keep it up as your lifestyle, as how you live, you got to have that community, because the energy fades and really the individual energy fades, but the energy of the community sustains itself. And it's that beautiful way in which, you know, as one person loses energy, someone else is gaining energy, not because of any, you know, one person taking it from someone else, but just because everybody's in a different place. And you know, so it's so important that we connect with each other and that we support each other. You know, I think in a lot of ways, it's the refuges really are what underpin our whole practice and our whole recovery. You know, the parallels, I mean, there's various ways to parallel, like in the 12 steps, that like I don't know what the Buddha of the 12 steps is. There's somebody's done this before. I can't remember who, but we could say the Dharma of the 12 steps is the steps themselves or the literature. And then the Sangha is the fellowship, you know. I mean, maybe the Buddha is the sober mind, you know, the archetype, if that's the archetype, the sober mind. And you know, and it's interesting that Noah Levine, you know, took the refuges as his sort of starting point and the name of his recovery program, Refuge Recovery. And I think that was very smart. You know, it's a great overlay to work and to avoid having to do, because he wanted to create a program that made no reference to God. And so here we go, you know, that's why here it is in my book about Dharma and God. It's like refuge is the kind of parallel. So I guess we agreed on that without intentionally. I don't think we ever had that conversation. But in any case, I really recommend that you ritualize this. That you ritualized just saying the refuges for yourself each day. And that then you think about them. You know, you don't just say them, but that you, if you don't already integrate them into a daily ritual, they're just a really good reminder. And yeah, I mean, I do that every day. And I admit that many times that's just a kind of ritual. It doesn't always have a lot of impact in my mind, but it's always there. And it starts to kind of have this background in your mind that you think of, and that you remember when you need it. I've talked about how through a couple of the crisis moments of the last few years that I've really turned to my refuge in the Dharma to remember, like, oh, well, everything is impermanent. And yes, if this really bad thing happens, life will go on, and just sort of keeping the big picture. That's one of the ways I think of taking refuge in the Dharma, just keeping a big picture. So I've talked for a while, and I will note that Angela has put enough things in the chat to keep you reading for the next 15 minutes. What do we have in here? My new book. Oh, yeah. Oh, you can still get a discount until January 27th. My day long tomorrow. Yes, in Oakland, that's 55th and Telegraph. I have a recent article in Lion's Roar. Huh, who knew? Podcast. Oh, yeah. Recent podcast. I was, boy, you can't keep up with me. I can't keep up with myself. And the residential retreat in March. That's kind of filling up, by the way. If you're interested in coming to that, you're going to best to get in touch about that. And then there's information about how to give me Donna offerings for my teaching. So those are always appreciated. So I've used up a lot of the time. I'm not in a hurry. There's no basketball game tonight, so I don't have to get off immediately at 8 o'clock. It's a good thing. These games have been stressing me out. But some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you just like couldn't care less. And that's just the way it is. So let me just open it up for anybody who wanted to share, to ask a question or to chime in. You can do the formal Zoom raised hand or just start shouting. Hopefully if you're not bombing the meeting, it'll be okay.
I just there's a comment or question in the chat.
Oh, there is?
Asking you to recite what you say daily.
Oh. I just say, and I do it at the end of my sitting, I do the five daily contemplations, which I make some variations on this, but I say, I am of the nature to age, to sicken, and to die. All that is mine, dear and delightful, will change and vanish. I am born of my karma, heir to my karma, related to my karma, supported by my karma, the owner of my karma. Whatever karma I do, whether wise or unwise, skillful or unskillful, this I will inherit. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. And then I ring the bell. And then I go have breakfast. Generally, I wouldn't make any promises, but that's the typical pattern. Daily contemplations, they must be in one of my books somewhere. Oh, there's some hands up. Great. Anne, hi. You haven't been swept out to sea. You're still muted, but
oh,
there you go. Yeah. I unmuted you.
Thanks. I was in my home yesterday morning and I'm like, you know, it really wasn't as bad as they said it was, you know? And so I'm like, I go down to the ocean. And it was a completely different world, of course. Yeah. I was overlooking the Capitola Wharf. It had just like collapsed. But the waves, these huge brown waves that were coming in sets were just slamming up against people's home businesses, you know, in the village of Capitola.
Is that south of Santa Cruz? Or?
It's south. Capitola is, well, not technically south, but yes.
But it's like on the bay there, kind of the Monterey Bay, right?
Right. So yeah, Capitola and Aptos, which is south of Capitola, which is where I live, the pier also collapsed.
Oh God.
Yeah. And so, you know, as I was watching that, I had the sense of, you know, I was having that bigger picture experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, watching this incredibly powerful thing, having no control, and yes.
Oh, darn.
I'm like those people with those livelihoods. It's a mess. So hopefully they have insurance and hopefully they have, you know, they have the help to clean up and so forth. And then the next day I was talking to my friend about it and I said, you know, I'm well aware that I live in a crumbling environment, you know, and the fires, people clearing up their woods, literally, you know, every year you hear these things. And I'm my nephew losing his home to a wildfire in Colorado 2 years ago. I'm just so much more aware and thankful to have that bigger picture. I immediately come to, yes, this is uncertain and this is impermanent and it's going to be a mess and it'll be very sad. And I'll be okay. That's such a mature attitude. You know, of course I didn't have that when I got sober for many years. I didn't have that attitude, but you know, that's what the practice has given me and the study of it and the sanghas of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess wanted to be grateful for that out loud. Because, there's some forces out there that are, we have no control most of the time. But
yeah, you know, when I was in community college, when I went back to school, I had to take some sciences, and I was never into science as a young person. And then, of course, as a sober person, science became really interesting. But I took a course, physical geography. And just the study of, and I took astronomy too, so I'm not sure which was course we covered this, maybe both, the atmosphere that makes it possible for the Earth to be the place that it is. It's ridiculous. Like the combination of things that had to be in balance in order to make this planet be so thriving with life is just incredible. So it's like, oops, something went a little off. Like, it can really go to hell real fast. It's just, it's a very delicate,
And so is the human body, right?
Yeah.
Cells can go bad like that.
Yeah.
And and I'm very aware I have a I live in a crumbling body.
Yeah.
Now more than ever. And so it is, and I'm so thankful for this attitude of acceptance on a completely higher level.
Yeah. That we can laugh and enjoy it, because this is what we have. This is this thing, you know, this weird thing called life, as Prince would say. Thanks.
Thanks, Kevin. Okay. I'll see you tomorrow, hopefully.
Oh, really? You're coming up?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
It's going to be raining. You better leave early, man.
Well, you know.
And you have to go over 17, man.
Well, I'm thinking of alternate ways.
I would go up through Boulder. Well, Boulder Creek's not great either. And there was a tree down in Pacifica too, on the Highway 1, blocking half the road.
Well, I'll make a helicopter, a
drone.
I'll take a boat.
Okay. All right. Let's hear from Catherine. It's nice to see you, Catherine.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, a little. You're a little fuzzy.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Check, check, check. You hear me? Yes?
I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Hi. I actually was funny. Coincidentally, I was going to ask about tomorrow's day long and just seeing if it was potentially, can you pop in, or do you just have to come right at 10 and stay?
Just come. Yes. Come when you can. Absolutely. And
ironically, Anne and you guys are talking about the force of the ocean. And I live in Pacifica, and I live in a small community that was, impacted pretty heavily. Our house is still standing. Our lives are intact. And it just, after it all went down, it was just a lot of debris and destruction, again, that didn't affect our lives. It was just, I had this sense of just deep gratitude and connection to like all that is. And just like, it just overcame me. And the energy was so intense all day. And, very intense. And I just appreciate that Anne was just talking about this. And it's just, today was just like an interesting day too, where I was just so exhausted and just feeling like the energy and the agitation, like even all day. And then I was like, oh, it's 7. I can come to this and just like mellow down and meditate. And it was a really great to be here and to know that y'all are here today. But that ocean, it really is, it's a higher power that doesn't always, care for us. But, I do feel like the connection, and I felt spared by the ocean just very grateful for so much post that. But and then actually before all this, we thought about going the day long, and I forgot about it until now. My husband and I were talking about it. So who knows? We might 50-50 chance might show up. Maybe okay. You can come this way. We can hop in the car if you want to carpool, but whatever. Anyway, I just want to thank you for the meeting. And I think I'm frozen, so
a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I think I froze. So, but that's all good. Zoom is uncertain. So, thank you.
Yes, Zoom is uncertain. Thanks, Catherine. It's good to have you. Wow. Yeah. If people just can make it for the afternoon or the morning or whatever, it's fine. As far as I'm concerned, it's sort of meant to be like a book party, I guess I don't have anything else to say, because the thing that's coming to mind isn't pleasant. And that. So just bad things that have been happening. And that's where I think the taking refuge becomes really the challenge. It's like, oh, wow. Like something, you know, that your house or your, you know, somebody you know or something really bad happens. So take care of yourselves. Be careful. What'd you put in here, Angela? The recollections I recorded.
I had written them down.
Oh.
You put them on your website a while ago, and so I found them.
Oh, good. Good job. You're so on the ball. All right, guys. So if I don't see you tomorrow, I'll be back here on Tuesday on Zoom. And then next Friday will be the Spirit Rock Zoom rather than this Zoom. So if you Zoom in here next Friday and it's like, why isn't anything happening? Remember, it was Spirit Rock. So just go over to their website and click on their link. So I hope that, everybody will stay safe. I mean, no matter where you are, in North America, at least, you're probably dealing with some kind of climactic. Always get those two are tough. Climatic. Yeah, sorry. Okay, it was a climax. But anyway, climate issues. Except Mike, who's in San Diego, right? Like, that's where the weather's always good. It's never bad down there. So I think we should all move into Mike's place.
It's beautiful today.
Yeah, I figured. All right. Blessings, everybody. Stay safe. Stay dry.